Hi folks, I've got a content note and an exciting announcement for you before we get into the show. There is a brief discussion of homophobic and transphobic harassment in this episode at around 14 and a half minutes in. And I also wanted to let you know that I'm having a book launch party! Yay! If you're in the New York City area, I would love to see you there. It's going to be on Wednesday, October 13th at 7 p.m. in the KGB Bar Red Room, which is at 85 East 4th Street. I will be reading from the book, selling and signing copies, and doing some live demos of kinks like hypnosis, sadomasochism, and sensory deprivation. I'll have more details for you soon, but please save the date and hope to see you there. Now enjoy this episode with our wonderful guest, Mix Nillon. Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I sure wish I was better at writing erotica. You'd think from those two titles that I might be okay at it, but I still feel like that's a skill I want to get better at. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and porn maker, and used to write a lot of erotica in the form of fan fiction, mostly.
That totally counts. I'm in the fan fiction is valid fiction camp.
For sure. And having read your fan fiction, you're quite good at that. You're a good writer.
Thank you.
Literally, your fan fiction got me into Brooklyn Nine-Nine because I was like, well, this is hot, so I don't know, the show's probably fine.
That's high praise.
This is Brooklyn Nine-Nine erotic fan fiction.
Yes.
Yes.
Amazing. Okay.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's so much kink going on in that show and like a weird amount of like gender fuckery in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the reason we're excited to talk about erotica today is that our guest is Mix Nillon, a sex writer, one of the most adventurous masturbators I've ever known in my life, and editor of the upcoming Own Voices anthology, Heckin Lewd, Trans and Nonbinary Erotica. Hi, Nillon. Nice to see you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me again. Really excited to chat about this, especially since I actually pitched that title thinking entirely, there's no way they're going to allow me to call a book Heckin Lewd. They were on board, and I was like, this is amazing.
Oh,
it's so great. It's just like full of personality, and it's right? so fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was perfect.
I would love to know a little bit about like your background when it comes to erotica. Like, how did you first get into reading and or writing erotica?
Oh, I mean, like, so in a lot of ways, I have to kind of thank Jisley for this, actually, because, you know, I had read, like, some erotica over the years when I was younger and stuff like that, but, like, it was a lot of the stuff on lit erotica here and there. Mm-hmm. There was definitely nothing that I was finding at the time that was, you know, trans and non-binary inclusive or had a lot of gender diversity outside of, you know, maybe here and there with some cross-dressing stories or that sort of thing going on. Mm-hmm. But then I got the opportunity to do a sensitivity read for a Joanna Angel book. I think it was Night Shift, Choose Your Own Erotic Adventure. Yeah, and so I read through that whole story about the sexy lumberjack cross-dressing. And I provided a ton of feedback. And she ended up like incorporating all of it, which was really cool. It was great. And I got a little shout-out in the book and everything. And it was kind of neat. And from there, I just started to kind of do my own writing on the blog, finally. I don't know why I hadn't tried before, actually, now that I think about it. But I think I was a little overwhelmed by the concept of being like, I can't write erotica. You, what?
Yeah.
once I gave it a go, outside of Jiz helping out with kind of, you know, empowering me to do so, then I was just straight up approached directly by Sinclair Sexsmith for Best Lesbian Erotica of the Year. And they really wanted one of my stories off the blog just as is. And I was like, I feel like I'm not doing any work to get published here, but it's happening. So
you already did the work when you wrote it.
Like, I guess that's true, right? Yeah. So can't complain there. That's honestly where it came from. And I just have refused to write anything but queer smut because I couldn't find much queer smut when I was younger. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put more out there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. When you started writing erotica on your blog, were you focusing on fiction or were you writing erotica like about your own experiences? Is there one of those that you prefer over the other?
I was definitely writing about my own experiences because I guess write what you know. But like, yeah, I tried to sit down and do some more like completely fiction based things that didn't have anything to do with me. And I just found I have ADD brain. Mm-hmm. I was wandering all over the place and I couldn't think of details. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. But when I think back to actual sexual experiences that I've had, it just seemed a lot easier.
Yeah.
So everything that I've written on the blog and everything that's been published that I've put out there so far is at least loosely based upon, you know, some experience that I've had myself, which has been kind of cool because I've been pretty fortunate to have had some pretty intense experiences, especially being in Saskatchewan, which is God-fearing country in Canada. So, you know, the fact that I get to go to a literal sex mansion where I'm hosting like orgies and gangbangs and I can write about those.
Love that.
Yeah. Like, right. It's pretty amazing. But I will say that I'm quite proud of myself because I have started to now write erotica based upon fantasies of mine.
Mm,
so okay. I'm starting to get a little bit, you know, like a little bit more into the fiction area.
Yeah. So that makes sense. Cool. I feel like it's good to have a starting point, whether it's your own experiences or like we were saying, fan fiction. Cause those two things for me, like I can picture the thing that I'm writing about really clearly in a way that I struggle to do if I'm just like making it up out of nowhere. So that makes sense that you'd start with that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a good launching point, right? So
yeah.
I'm finding it so fascinating. I think a lot of folks who do not work in sexuality or as sex writers would probably expect there to be a lot more of an overlap between like sex writing and journalism and blogging and that sort of thing and erotica writing. I think a lot of mm-hmm. people would kind of expect it to be the same skill set, mm-hmm. but I'm finding like everyone on this call is like, no, they're very different. Writing about sex and writing to be sexy are very different. And I'd love to hear like, I don't know, from some of y'all, what differences you noticed or like how those skills vary, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, I've never looked up a research study to cite while I was writing a piece of fiction, you know? But I mean, do it all the time, right? With my other stuff. What do you think, Milan?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a different degree to it, right? Like mm-hmm. when I'm doing a lot of blog posts, I mean, I guess I do write again quite a bit about like my own personal sex life and like the relationship dynamics that I have with my kitten, my fuck meat, like queer platonic partners, friends with benefits, date friends. Mm-hmm. That's a huge kind of area of my blog as well, because again, I really love talking about, you know, non-traditional relationship structures and mm-hmm. challenging the system. But like, you know, I just posted this big thing about the other day about three tips on you know how to plan an orgy and like you know. You would think like, oh yeah, there'd be a lot of making that some sexy writing, but that was a lot of just literally sitting down and thinking about all these, like every single detail. What if there's a fire? What if like what if an angry neighbor kicks the door in? Like, we gotta think about these things, guys.
That's making me think though, but like it would be such a cool framing for an erotica story for it to be called like five tips for planning an orgy, and then each one is just like, you know, you actually see it in action in the story. Yeah.
That's pretty good, actually. There you go. Now you finally have your first erotica concept.
There's a prompt.
I find for me when I'm writing erotica versus like informational stuff, uh-huh. I feel a little more boxed in on tone. Like I am like, I feel like when I'm writing erotica mostly, and this isn't true, like erotica is art, I could be conveying whatever I want, but I feel like mostly all the way through I'm supposed to be like, this is sexy, making you horny things. Yeah. Whereas like when I'm just talking about sex, I will use like, I will get randomly really explicit or a little horny or whatever, because it, like, I do it in my workshops because it gets attention. Like, I will suddenly dirty talk for a second and then go back to, like, regular as, like, an illustrative thing or as a tool.
Yeah.
The same way I use humor and things like that. But when I'm working on erotica and I am like, no, I just live in just that one voice, I find it it's a different headspace and it's more challenging, I think.
Well, I even think about, I tried to do a review for that Sohimi sex doll I was sent not too long ago on the blog, and I tried to make it sexy. There's, I don't know, like, you're still reviewing a torso, right?
Yeah, so, I liked that review. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, like, I had fun with it, but, like, I still, like, had to come at it from, like, another direction, right? Like, so I'm coming at it more of a direction of, like, personifying it and talking about it as if it was a partner and other things that you can do with the Sohimi sex doll, take her on a date, you know, take selfies together, like, use her as stress relief. She sits on my desk and I play her bum like the bongo sometimes. It's like, it's really great. Yeah, it's good.
That was always fun when I worked in the sex shop. I used to do that.
Yeah. Right? You got to walk through, you got to check the jiggle.
Yeah, exactly. Just check in on them, tap, tap.
Yeah, going like, oh, this is a good quality. This is a good one. Okay, cool. Yeah.
I love when horny writing is also able to be funny and real. And those are always my favorite stories. And, like, I'm working on a submission right now for a Sinclair anthology and, like, really second-guessing myself as I'm doing it. And then I'm just like, I should just write this as if it was a thing that happened to me, which means that there's going to be goofy moments in it and there's going to be emotional moments. And I don't need to just, like, you know, have my foot on the gas pedal the whole time in terms of horny stuff just constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's hard to remember. I think we talked about it last time, too, about, like, how, like, the, you know, humor and just the awkwardness and embracing all the ridiculous stuff that comes up during sex is really the good way to handle it. It's a good way to go. It just makes it more interesting. It makes it a funnier read. Like, so if you're reading erotica and you're just like, I want to include that stuff, or I don't know how to do it without including that stuff, like, no, include it.
Yeah.
Do it. Mm-hmm. Did you fart after you came? Throw that in there. Do
yeah,
it.
For sure. Some people will be into that. Yeah. So the anthology that you're working on is an Own Voices anthology, and I would love to hear a bit from you about what that means and why it's important.
For sure. Like, so, like, really, when it comes down to it, sometimes writing, you know, trans and queer erotica can be a little bit challenging, and in the past, you know, a lot of folks kind of struggle with how to do representation in a way that isn't maybe stereotyped or guided by public perceptions and that sort of thing that are not so true to the experience, per se. I know that, like, I remember when I was first looking up a bunch of stories, they read more like The Crying Game than they read about, like, you know, anything that was actually sexy. And so, to me, it's very, very important that trans erotica also comes from, you know, trans individuals and gender diverse people. So with this anthology, there's no gatekeeping. Like, I'm not asking for some sort of proof. there's no way to really determine that, per se. But, like, I do hope that everyone that submits to it does so, and when they're coming from a place of being trans, non-binary, genderqueer, questioning even themselves. I do find that a lot of the erotica that does come in from those individuals, when it's about themselves, and you give them the freedom to be, in this case, heckin' lewd about it. And, like, and I'm literally asking for, like, somebody even asked, like, how lewd do you want? I'm like filthy. Send me the filthiest shit that you can have. Like, just, like, so dirty, messy, sloppy, over the top, ridiculous. Like, that's what I want. And I also have asked, you know, like, for people who submit to not that it doesn't have to be in there, not that it's not part of our stories and our narratives, but I'm looking at this collection as being literal escapism that a trans person can pick it up off the shelf and not read about, you know, physical trauma or street harassment or even like familial abuse. All these stories I hope will be 100% celebratory and really, 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 really sinful and dirty. And the book will catch on fire as soon as you touch it, because it's just like, no, can't read this. It's too filthy.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions, was I really liked that point you made in the call for submissions about wanting to avoid, like, detailed depictions of transphobia and homophobia. Like, these are obviously, like, part of the lives of trans and queer people, but I totally agree with you that, like, they're not always going to be the greatest for, like, escapism and for erotica and, like, you know, they can maybe be, like, mentioned probably, right? But, like, not gone into detail. Like, that doesn't seem like what you want when you pick up a book like that, generally.
No, and I mean, especially for myself, too, it's just like, you know, if I'm going to sit down and invest in reading erotica, like, I want to be excited. I want to be horny, not sad. Yeah. Like, I get enough of that when, you know, like, I, you know, even just the other week, I ended up getting featured for CBC Radio. It's going to be happening here Sask not too long ago because I went for a haircut and was at the barber. It was an incredible experience, really great. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly more gender affirming than I thought it would be. But I had this awesome, awesome, like, euphoric moment, and then I was there in my dress. Nobody in the barbershop was, like, giving me the side eye or anything. Everyone just seemed totally chill and awesome. And then I stepped outside, and the second the door closed behind me, this truck came by, and they slammed on the brakes, and I hear, is that a guy in a dress?
Oh, my God.
And it was just like, ugh. So, you know, that juxtaposition of, like, here's this euphoric moment, and then here's, oh, right, crushing reality that mm-hmm. can happen when you walk outside. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I bring this up is because when I pick up, you know, erotica books, and especially if I'm wanting to read about trans and non-binary erotica, sometimes, like, you know, our stories are always laced with the trauma. There's mm-hmm. there's always pain, there's always hurt. Mm-hmm. And that is part of our journeys, that is part of our growth. But, like, I want the euphoria. I want the sexy stuff sometimes. If I'm reading erotica, I want escapism and to feel hot and mm-hmm. affirmed. So in this case, that's what I'm kind of asking for. You know, I just want somebody browsing the shelves to pick up heckin' lewd and it to be heckin' lewd and to make them just feel hot as they're reading it, whether that's aroused or they're reading something that's reflective of themselves going, oh, that's me and I'm sexy too. Oh my God. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. So
that's so awesome. Uh-huh. You mentioned Sinclair Sexsmith, and I know that they are like a big voice in the erotica space uh-huh. and have been very like pushing for trans inclusivity in that space. But I'm wondering, like, more generally, when you look at the erotica world, are you seeing more like trans friendliness in recent years? Like, what are you seeing there?
I mean, I find that a lot, like, you know, like the sex blogging community, and y'all know that I did a lot of speaking out last year that caused some kerfuffles and some ruffles.
Because there's like a streak of turfiness in the British blogging world.
Didn't want to say it, but
yeah,
it's definitely there. And like, yeah. I mean, like it really, and you know, I don't really know the whole situation, but you know, between like, you know, Rowling and a lot of the rhetoric that's happening over in the UK, it's kind of sad to see, for whatever reason, how, you know, entrenched it seems to be right now. Mm-hmm. And it does come out in the writing a lot too, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But, with erotica, I find that, like, it's not so much that, but there is a huge degree of just, like, publishers are not publishing it. Like, they're just not. Mm-hmm. I won't name who, but I've been trying to pitch, this particular anthology, to a couple different publishers, and one in particular for 2 years about now. Mm-hmm. And it was always like, no, we're not interested. That's not going to sell. That we don't have a market for that. Mm-hmm. And when I approached Bold Stroke Books, who, like, just kind of very explicitly describes himself as being, you know, queer owned, queer run, queer centric. Mm-hmm. They it was like the email came back within half an hour and were like, yes, let's do this. When do you want to do it? I was like, oh my God, finally. Right. So
great.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, when I was trying to think about it even afterwards about like, okay, so like where does my trans erotica come from? Like, where is it going to go? This anthology, like, where am I going to go from what's already out there? And I went to go look at what's already out there, and there's not a lot. Like, I could find a couple of anthologies that were, you know, explicitly trans anthologies. Mm-hmm. You know, there was Nerve Endings
with Nerve the Toby.
I know, right? Like, incredible work by Toby Hillmeyer. Mm-hmm. And then my partner actually, my other partner, had this anthology called Trans Love from early in the 2000s. I've mm-hmm. never even heard of this thing, but it does exist because I was holding it. But I haven't really checked that one out, and I'm really excited to, because I just had no idea that there was even, you know, trans erotica at that time, let alone that there was this big collection.
Right.
So it's kind of strange going to do a trans and non-binary erotica anthology, thinking like, how are we gonna grow? How are we gonna take the quote-unquote industry around these particular, like, you know, topics and experiences, mm-hmm. When these particular topics and experiences are surprisingly not really in erotica.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least not a lot that's on the store shelves or that you know, that's in print, per se. And I mean, if there's somebody out there that's listening that has, like, a whole list of a whole bunch of other ones, like, please definitely share, because mm-hmm. they're hard to find, and I don't see them... huge swaths of them online. And sure, there might be some, like, inside certain anthologies here and there. And again, that's where Sinclair comes in, and individuals like Sinclair, mm-hmm. where, you know, they're taking, a lesbian anthology collection and saying, like, okay, but, like, lesbians aren't of one kind. Mm-hmm. And here's the vast array of lesbians with penises, lesbians, of different sizes, lesbians without breasts, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, extremely important to have mm-hmm. the diversity in, like, bodies, sexualities, ethnicities, etc. Mm-hmm. that you don't get a lot. So, yeah. Womp womp.
I'm curious. You mentioned, like, since you're going to be probably one of the few explicitly, like, specifically trans anthologies out there. I know you've mentioned that you've given a lot of thought to the kinds of things you don't want to include, right? These explicit depictions of trauma and that sort of thing. And obviously you want it to be diverse in voices and stuff, but have you given any thought to, like, what you want to communicate about trans sex, right? You're going to be one of the touchstones of representation out there for a little, you know, younger trans folks looking for erotica. What do you want to say trans sex is like? What kind of stories do you want to tell?
So fucking hot. Trans sex is the hottest sex. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, like, and I was thinking about this the other day. I was just like my sex life, like, mm-hmm. not to boast, but is incredible. It's the mm-hmm. best sex I could have ever possibly imagined, like, in all of my years. Preteen Nillen, who was sitting at home going, yay, boobies, like, has had no idea what was coming. Like, I'm literally, like, a couple days ago, I had a date friend come down from Prince Albert, mm-hmm. And then I had my partner and both of their partners, one of whom I'm kind of, like, in this little triad thing with, And then another friend, and so there was like five of us that went out, like, just like went out for some drinks and hung out, and we came back home, and then just debauchery unfolded, just, like, group sex in every room, just everyone pouring all over each other, all these different bodies, absolutely nothing about, like, the sex that we were having was anything that I've ever seen in any films or read about in any books.
That's how you know it's good.
Right, exactly. And so, like, that's what I really want to put out there. And somebody picking it up and saying, you know, especially when, like, when, you know, you're exploring your sexuality and you're exploring your gender, and you don't really know what, like, queer sex is, let alone how to have sex in a trans body, or gender non-conforming body. One of the longest questions I've been asking for years as a non-binary person is, what is sexy? How do I sexy? Yeah. Right? So, really what I want this book to say is, like trans sex, sex with trans people having sex is it's incredible. You don't even know. Cause, like, flat out, like, the hands down, the best years of my life, romantically, relationshiply, and I said romantically. I'm aromantic.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, actually. I was gonna say we'll get to that in the second year. But anyway, yeah, that's the idea of my book. I think is, like, I really, what I want people to take away is to pick up that book and go, like, fuck, I want to have trans sex.
That's so fucking powerful, because I, something I talk about a lot is the idea of transness being, like, moving towards this feeling of euphoria rather than away from this feeling of dysphoria, because I think the narrative a lot of people get is that, you are trans because the way you feel is just so miserable, you have to do something else about it. So you go through this transition process. And I was like, I don't feel miserable, but when people call me he, it feels warm and fuzzy. I don't know. My therapist was like, maybe you get to feel warm and fuzzy. And I was like, shut the fuck up. What?
How dare you?
You should write a book, honestly. But, like, so I love this idea. And honestly, one of the things that I was nervous about, which was also this idea of, like, moving away from femininity, was, like, am I giving up being sexy for feeling good in my body? Right? Yeah, especially, like, you know, because women are sexualized in ways that are super unhealthy in our culture and in ways that are fun for people who get like being objectified sometimes, right? Feelings are complicated. So having models of trans sex being just fun and hot and sexy, like when I started following more trans guys in porn on my feed, I was like, oh, right, I get to be sexy in different other ways. Right. Okay, great. This is, look at them being hot. I could do that. Great. So I think this is really important.
No, I totally agree. And that's, and like, I'm really glad to hear that you like, you found those spaces and you found those models and stuff like that to like, like to see and have reflected back. I find the same thing. Like my Twitter is super curated to be literally all the trans queers that I could possibly find because I just wanted that constant feedback of like I am sexy. I can be sexy. Sexy doesn't look like one particular way. And even for myself, you know, like, I've always wondered about, you know, transition steps. Cause I thought like, you know, how do I transition as a non-binary person? I've done practically nothing. I'm not on HRT. I didn't do voice training. I haven't done any surgeries. I think the most surgical thing that I have planned in the future is a vasectomy. But that's not even really trans related. So it's like, yeah. And you know, like just being able to like redefine your body in a way that like feels like you and realizing that you don't have to do any of those steps whatsoever if you don't want to, or you can do some of them and not all of them. And it doesn't like suddenly make you a less sexual being, and it's not required for you to, you know, have the good sex that you want to have. You can have it along the way, right? So, yeah, but like exactly with that whole idea of just even the word like he giving you like those warm fuzzy feelings is like, you know, just like the first time I ever heard somebody like huffily going down on me and saying, your girl cock feels so good in my mouth. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Just like, just hearing that was so good. Yeah. So
that's so lovely. I feel like erotica is such a great medium for like communicating these values and these feelings that you want people to feel, because it's like they're busy reading about the sexy stuff and the characters, and they're not necessarily thinking about like what values they're absorbing. I notice this when I go back and read erotica stories that I read as a very young person, and I'm like, wow, I haven't thought about this story in a long time, and yet it's like in my brain, like I, you know, it has influenced my fantasies all these many years in ways that I didn't even realize. And I think that that's really, you know, a strong possibility with erotica. And so it's really nice to be building like new models of sexiness through erotica.
Totally agree. Super important.
So you mentioned coming out as gay romantic, and I'm really curious about like whether that's an identity that you depict in your erotica, or like how that plays into erotica for you.
It's so interesting because like I thought it was something that I wasn't maybe depicting my erotica, but then when I was actually thinking about the stories that I was writing, I did realize that like I you know, I spend more of my time developing a relationship structure or a bond between two individuals that isn't romantic, that I'm like, oh, wait a second, like maybe this is queer platonic erotica. I just didn't realize I was writing it right now. So really when it comes to like a lot of, you know, the stories that I do write, like there's definitely going to have those thoughts and those feelings at play there. But generally speaking, a lot of the characters that I write about and the characters that I include in my stories, you know, are coming from a place of being longtime best friends, you know, exploring a new sort of avenue that's going on, or even if they're partners, it's, you know, it's so focused more on their shared pleasure and just their connection as two individuals, and like how important the roles that they play in each other's lives are. I don't write a lot of romanticism into my pieces, really, for the reasons that just like I don't really get it. But like I mean, I do get it, and if I wanted to sit down and write a romance story, quote unquote, I do feel like I could probably do it. Like I've seen enough chick flicks, and
romance is pretty saturated in trans culture.
Exactly, I feel like I could probably do it just fine. But it's funny that you do mention it, because my next challenge to myself is to write an aromantic romance book.
That's so exciting! Right,
thank you. And I'm it's going to happen. So that's going to be my next few months, I think, is trying to map this out a little bit and think about like how it can look, you know, with those expressions and stuff like that. So because like really when it comes down to it, and it's just like romance is important to a lot of people, and like I definitely don't want to undermine it whatsoever, but like in my personal experience, like romance doesn't have to be a part of sex at all, and sex can be extremely, extremely pleasurable and passionate and intimate and sensual and meaningful without it. Just mm-hmm. like, you know, a lot of my relationships exist that, you know, some people go like, well, like, how do you have these meaningful relationships without love? And I'm like, you think I don't love my partners?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love them immensely. It's just, it's not romantic. And,
right.
And people just can't wrap their heads around, you know, intimate love that isn't romantic. And I think that that's why it's so important, you know, that I keep writing about this and keep talking about it a little bit, is to, mm-hmm. to just give people more of a gauge to say, like, a queer platonic relationship, you know, all other love that isn't romantic love isn't just love for your mom or love for, mm-hmm. like, you know, your sister or your dog right. or something like that. You know, like, you can deeply love somebody and cohabitate with them and build a life with them, and it just not be romantic by nature, so... Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. I'd love to hear a little more about your experience with that, because I think for folks who haven't spoken to aromantic folks or folks on that spectrum, it may sound weird for them to be hearing like these ideas of intimacy and love separated from these ideas of romance. Like, for a lot of people, those may feel synonymous. They may not have parsed those feelings so much yet. So I'm curious if you could kind of talk about the distinction between those and how that feels different for you.
Oof. Okay, so, like, I mean, first of all, it's really, really weird, because whenever anyone asks me, like, what is romance specifically, like, my only answer is, it's like, when you say that it is.
Like, it's like when people ask me what masculinity is, and I'm like, I don't know, but I'm supposed to inhabit it. Listen, you tell me, I don't know.
Well, and I always kind of go back to, like, examples of, like, how you can cuddle with your friend and hold their hand and mm-hmm. go, and swoon over each other and feel really good about, like, that connection that you have together. Mm-hmm. And it not be romantic. Mm-hmm. But then you can do it with a partner, and all of a sudden it's inherently romantic because it's your partner. Mm-hmm. So, like, what really is the difference between those two things? What made one romantic and what made the other one not romantic? Well, as far mm-hmm. as I'm aware, in that specific example, is saying that one of them was. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, for me, when I experience, you know, like, love, or when I experience sensuality and stuff like that, like, a lot of my experiences are literally just saying, where you might assume, you know, say the big romance thing and say that you're feeling all those, like, you know, romantic expressions and whatever. I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling content. I'm feeling comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling safe. I'm feeling fulfilled, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those are my experiences of love, mm-hmm. are just all those other facets of it, you know, that the word love comes with all these different, like, you know, aspects of it. And, like, and I, for me, I can parse all those aspects individually, as they sort of are. Mm-hmm. And it's just the more that I think about it, it's crazy. I feel like I'd have a big web on a wall behind me trying to explain, like, okay, but, like, what is romance then? Because every person that I've asked who is romantic, I ask them, like, what is romance to you? And then the more they think about it, they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, right.
Yeah.
I told you.
I had to define romantic attraction for my next book, because it's a bunch of definitions of words. And what I ended up writing was just something along the lines of, like, it's the desire to do romantic things with a person, such as cuddling, kissing, holding their hand, going on dates with them, and or to be in a romantic relationship with someone. And both of those things are, like, very nebulous and very much however you define them, because I agree with you. It's, like, it's a really tricky thing to define. I think it's one of those things that, like, if you've felt it, you probably know that you've felt it. Yeah. But also, like, if you haven't felt it, you might not know. Like, when I've interviewed asexual people, some of them have been like, I didn't know that I was asexual, because if you haven't felt sexual attraction, you can't know if you're not feeling it. And, like, of course, that makes complete sense. But, like, a lot of people just don't think about that.
Yeah, well, and especially when you're talking about, like, all those things about, like, you know, when you do romantic things and you list cuddling, holding hands, going on dates. I do all those things with my date friend, Kate, and none of them are romantic when we do them, right? So it's like, so again, I keep going back to, like, so what is romance other than the thing that you say is romance? Like, it's just really weird. And so, like, I can relate to those feelings of, you know, like, in some way that, like, you know, what's depicted and stuff like that. It's just... I guess I find myself, I don't know, I need a lot of space sometimes. I'm not, like, the most super swoony / sitting in the moment going, over like candlelit dinner and stuff like that. I'm more the person of like, this food is delicious. Where's the wine? Let's go. Like, yeah. So it's really weird to parse and like explain something when neither you or the people that experience them can really quantify it other than by saying, oh, kind of like in this movie. And you're like, okay. So you watch the romance film, you watch A Walk to Remember or whatever. And then on the flip side, though, like I can see myself in a situation like that entire plot of that movie and it still not be romantic. Like,
right. I love that movie.
Oh, it's so good, right?
I've never seen it.
So
you wouldn't like it.
So the funny thing is that when I was younger, yeah, the funny thing is that when I was younger, so my friend brought me to see that and we were two dudes at the time, you know, we were guys. And we watched it and like we fucking bawled our eyes out. But like the theater was like so quiet and we didn't tell a soul because like it was just like nobody can know about this. And then we went to see it together 5 more times.
Oh my god, it's so good. I had it on VHS and I would just watch it and then rewind and watch it again and just like, I don't know, there's something about that movie.
Oh, for sure. And I love Mandy Moore like forever because of
it. Oh, I know. I love Shane West also.
Right.
I'm very bisexual for that film. Anyway.
That's fair.
A lot of what you were describing was making me think about, like, so I'm demisexual, which is, like, a pretty different thing from gray romantic, but, like, one of the things that I have trouble communicating to people is that you can have sex without sexual attraction, and it can still be good sex. Like,
yeah.
I think a lot of people are very confused by this, because they're like, oh, so you're demisexual, so you don't have sexual attraction until you have an emotional connection, but you've had casual sex, you've slept with people that you've, like, just met, and I'm like, yeah, like, I didn't feel sexually attracted to them, but that's not really, like, the only point of sex for me. Like it's still, it can be pleasurable. It can be intimate. It can be a way of developing that emotional connection. It can be adventurous and fun. There's so many reasons for it. And I feel like people are very confused by that. Maybe I should write like a demisexual erotica story or something.
Oh my God, please. Genuinely, please do, right? Yeah. And like maybe that's the same thing with like gray romanticism to some degree too. Like I would say like there's some correlations, right? Mm-hmm. So those same reasons why you're explaining how like, you know, you can still have sex and not have sexual attraction and still enjoy it sort of thing. It's like similarly like I can go on a date and still have a great date.
Right.
And enjoy that experience, but it still wasn't romantic for me sort of thing, right? Like, I don't know if that's, like, a weird comparison to make.
No,
but
that makes sense.
It's kind of interesting.
Okay, so I now have a vision of this demisexual story, though, and it's, like, I have no idea if this would be, like, an accurate representation of your experience, which is why I'm not the person to write it, but... I'm imagining just a series of vignettes and like separate sex scenes and like watching the sexual attraction kind of grow and simmer throughout like little dates and little sex scenes. And some of them are longer and some of them are like a few sentences because they did this thing when we were at the bar and I don't know, I felt a glimmer for a second and that's interesting. And just like the whole process of seeing that kind of attraction grow be really fun.
Yeah. Honestly, that would be a really cool read and like something that, again, is not out there in erotica, but should be.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you'd get to see like the different ways, like, I don't know, I bet you could do some fun stuff with the language you use to describe sex scenes. Like the things you would be doing would look the same, but would be described differently, right? Maybe with increasingly flowery language or something to kind of
the dick of someone I'm not yet sexually attracted to, it's just like, whoa, cool. cool fun
interesting
dick. And then once I'm actually like attracted to them, I'm like, oh my god, I need that dick in me. It's like such a different vibe.
Okay, and you could write it as journal entries, though. They could be the little journal entries you've written at the end of dates describing the things that happened. Anyway, you have to write the story now, Kate. Sorry.
I'm coming away from this interview with so many erotica prompts. Thank you. You're just like helping us brainstorm. It's great.
What I'm here for. Boom.
So this is totally out of left field, but you had a blog post recently that was about sex stress and impotence. And I feel like that actually like dovetails really nicely with this conversation about like the ways that sex can be unconventional. It doesn't have to look the way that people expect it to look. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
For sure. Like, I think in a lot of ways that, and this is just, you know, me as an individual, is that I can find myself getting really like stuck in my own head about, performance, right? Like, you want to have good sex, but, like, more importantly for me, I want to be the person that, like, afterwards you're like, oh, that was great sex with Nilan, right? So I'm thinking of, like, I want them to feel pleasurable, that they're having fun. And so it used to not be as much of an issue, but I've been finding lately, and, like, maybe this is related to a certain generational trauma that we've all been through together in
could
some
be,
degree.
Could be.
I don't know, just saying. I lately I've been finding this really interesting issue where the more that I'm thinking about even just penetrating somebody, the less likely it's going to happen. So it's a degree of, like, you know, somebody could be asking me, like, please fuck me, Nilan, please. And then in my mind, I'm going, like, okay, I need to get an erection. I need to maintain it. Where's the lube? Okay, now getting in position. Ah, oh, my, got a little Charlie horse in my leg or whatever. okay, where's the hole I'm going for? Trying to get it in, trying to make sure that I, like, maintain that erection and that I come and ejaculate, because, like, the whole idea with a lot of the sex with my partners in particular are we're all really into breeding kink, so like, this is a huge thing, right? So it's just created this really weird sex stress that's making it more and more difficult for me to actually have the sex that I was kind of wanting to have in that moment. But the kicker is it's all self-induced. Think about that.
Yeah.
God damn it. So
that's the most maddening. Right? You're like, come on, my own body.
Like, really? Thanks. But, like, I mean, that's where the beauty of, in my opinion, a lot of queer and trans sex comes, because in the past, when I think about, you know, if I had had impotence or whatever, and I mean, this is generalizing a little bit, maybe. Sorry. but, like, you know, if I was with a girlfriend or something that was more of, like, this, I'll just say a heterosexual culture of sex, and it's just like, oh, well, you can't get a boner, sex is over.
Right.
Like, you know, like, that's just kind of the end of it, and, like, we're all sad about it, and then I feel emasculated or whatever, and they're feeling unsatisfied, and then we just don't talk about it. not to say, and again, not to say that that's always the case, but it was definitely my experiences, when I was, you know, in that kind of frame of mind, versus now, where it's like, okay, so the chances of me bouncing back from a stress sort of situation are a lot higher, because there's so many ways to have sex and so many ways to have. I've been ejaculating without a full boner, like, recently, even, like, like, you don't need a full erection to ejaculate or experience an orgasm, like, at all. There's so many other ways to have pleasure and to pleasure your partner. You got fingers, you got toys, magic, right? So I think the big thing for myself lately has been just trying to remind myself, like, it's okay to not have it play out exactly the way that, you know, you maybe were planning on it. And that if it doesn't go according to plan, you're feeling stressed, it doesn't have to be the end of it. You can take a deep breath. You can still have a lot of fun, still feel really good. And I just wanted to share that with a lot of my readers and a lot of folks out there, especially, you know, folks with who have a penis and, like, struggle with that sort of pressure that they put on themselves. Because the kicker is, too, that I'm realizing a great deal of my sex stress and a great deal of my impotence struggles come from the effects of toxic masculinity that I was raised with, about all those ideas about virility and whatever, of, like, you know, only real men have the hardest, biggest cocks and last the longest and come with absolutely no refractory periods because they are machines. Yeah. which is, like, just not true in general.
Yeah.
But, like, but it's so strange to me that that's still kind of impacting me, even though I'm non-binary and queer and so on and so forth, that it was such socialization that it's still back there having a residual effect even today. And it's like, ah, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I feel like I wish that more people with penises would be comfortable using strap-ons. Like, this is an issue that I feel personally passionate about. Because, yeah, I've dated a number of people with penises. A lot of them have had the stress that you're describing. And I think two or three of them have been willing to strap on. And, like, in many cases, that's been, like, more positive for both of us, because we don't have to worry about a boner issue. We don't don't have to worry about like them lasting long enough for me to come.
Yeah.
It just helps with a lot of stuff. And I honestly really admire people who are like secure enough in themselves to be able to do that. Cause I know that that can be difficult because of the very conditioning that you're describing.
Mm-hmm. On that same topic, which is interesting, a thing to throw out to some, you know, listeners is the fact that like, I tried a cock sleeve, sheath, not too long, or cock sleeve. Mm-hmm. And like, that was revolutionary because like, you know, even if I, you know, only had half an erection or whatever, the fact is like, you know, lube yourself up and you can put your cock in the sheath, mm-hmm. attach it to yourself. Chances are that you might even get more aroused from it or whatever. But the fact is that like,
it functions somewhat as a cock ring as well, right? And the way you kind of attach it to yourself, it goes around your balls, yeah?
Exactly, right? And so there's this magical effect of almost like, it's kind of like, it's strap-on fucking, mm-hmm. but it's without the strap-on part. It's more of like, yeah, you're right, the, I forget what you said the word was.
Like a cock ring.
There we go, thank you, cock ring, yeah. So more of like the cock ring effect, but then also you have that extension of like the girth and the length a little bit, mm-hmm. but mainly what I really loved about it was that like, if I was feeling really stressed about like coming too fast, all of a sudden that was alleviated, mm-hmm. because even if I did come too fast, that's fine. I this was still there for me to use. Right.
And right.
So I still had like, my enhancement, like,
and do you still have sensation?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, I mean, like I personally found that like, afterwards, I still had sensation. And I also actually found that, like, because I had it on and I was feeling less stressed, obviously, mm-hmm. because there was that contingency, I guess, in place for me, mm-hmm. I lasted way longer than I anticipated, mm-hmm. And got, like, extremely, extremely hard in it. And, like, it was just, like, I don't know, I just strongly recommend it as an idea to go with. And so if you're having trouble with the whole idea of like using the strap on for whatever reason, because it's quote unquote not you, if that's something that's in your head, mm-hmm. and whatever, you know, don't worry about using toys. They don't have to all be you, but also you can use this, and like it's an extension of you, and gives a similar effect of being able to like, you know, have that penetrative sex if you're struggling with penetration.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the ball dildo?
I have not.
Oh my god. This seems kind of up your alley now that I think about it. It's like,
it sounds up my alley.
It's very, I kept thinking that it's like pretty queer, just the way that it's so inventive. Like it's a device that you like slip over your balls that enables you to fuck someone with your balls, but also feel ball sensation at the same time. I haven't, you know, tried it with anybody because I don't think that it's out yet, but I'm very fascinated by it.
Yeah, no, like I'm very into this.
So. Yeah, go look it
so
up.
So many faces.
It was excited. It was contemplative. It was a little bit scared, but most aroused.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Definitely go have a Google about it because there's like there's some strange videos and there's some very interesting stuff to be found about it.
I love it so much. That sounds great.
All right. So before we wrap up, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to where people can submit their story. Awesome. But I'm wondering if you could give us any final words about like what kinds of things you're looking for, what you'd love to see, how people can raise their chances of their story getting in, that kind of thing.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So like definitely first and foremost, I'm like, you know, with every sort of anthology, I have received a couple submissions that didn't feature trans characters. That would be a big one. So I just want to put it out there to remind, you know, everyone that is like doing submissions and stuff like that, how important it is to read the call to submissions pretty closely. Yeah. But like my inbox is
that's
like,
not even closely. That's in the title. That's probably in bold font, honestly.
I don't want to sound like a dick, but
I do. Okay, I got that for you. No worries. Anyway,
so
carry on.
So please send me trans erotica or non-binary erotica. I also wanted to say too, like I'm like give me all sorts of stuff across the spectrum, and like I would love to get agender stories. I would love to get gender fluid stories. It doesn't just have to be that, you know, the universal experiences or the more generalized trans woman, trans men, non-binary person. Give me a story about somebody like questioning their gender. That's cool too, who has no idea what they're doing. Even cross-dresser erotica. I'm at the point too that, like, you know, I strongly believe that you know, femboys, etc. Like that's all part of gender nonconformity, and there's mm-hmm. there's room for everybody in the community. And if you got femboy erotica, like I want to read it. Like, send me your stories about your hot bussy getting pounded by a Beppis. I don't know. Please, actually, you know what? Don't use Beppis. Okay, don't use Beppis. I can't do it. But really, I guess what I really got to come down to is saying, like, reiterating, it's called heckin' lewd, and by that I mean like really fucking heckin' lewd. the lewdest. Try to keep it a little bit more in the ethical range, obviously, but like if your story is like a spin-off of Spider-Man, but it's just like it's just it's cum and like spins webs, like I want to read it.
Spider-Envy,
like I want to read it. Yeah. Let's see what it is about this weird spider person that like can stick people to walls with their cum.
I want to anyway. Read that now. What the hell?
I'm just still stuck on in the ethical range. That delights me as a fucking creature.
In the ethical in range, area. You know, in that area. Because really when it comes down to it, it's just like, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan of public sex and outdoor sex. And do your best, right? Like, you know, think about the details. Think about the time of day, the lighting, etc. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look for security cameras.
Do your best.
Do your best. Okay. Yeah.
Nilan, this has been so much fun. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Before we go, can you please tell our listeners where they can find you online and anything else that you want them to know?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can just find me online at www.mixnilan.com, as well as on Twitter as Mixnilan Lore. My Twitter account is locked because, again, I did call outs last year, and I needed to insulate a little bit and quiet my feed. But if you are a reader, or if you are especially queer and trans yourself, and you're looking for more connection, please feel free to send like a follow request, and I will likely approve it.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've been Kate Sloan. I'm at girlyjuice.net. My book is coming out in like 3 weeks or something. Oh my god! You can order it at 101kinkythings.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. And my other podcast is called Question Box. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex Caputo. You can find all my writing at bextalksex.com. I also have information about all my workshops there. When this one launches, hopefully I will have my October one scheduled. So you'll be able to find them at bextalksex.com or by searching Bex Caputo on Eventbrite. I'm hosting a couple of Zoom workshops a month. And in October, hopefully I'm going to be debuting my new Impact Play workshop that is as yet untitled, but I'm quite excited about it. If you want to see me naked on the internet, you can go to @BillyLore on Twitter, and I have all my links there to my Pocket Stars and Just for Fans and ManyVids and all that. I recently released a really hot threesome video with Antifa Bussy or Austin Spears. I know, he's so
my God.
Hot.
He's so hot. Highly recommend it. Everyone does the Billy Lore follow, by the way.
It's just, and the video is so good. It's so long. It's like 45 minutes, and I've watched it so many times. Anyway, you should go watch it together with the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Dildorks, or also at thedildorks.com, and at patreon.com/thedildorks, where if you're already a subscriber, you want to update your, I don't know, what are they, subs, patron level?
Pledge,
yes.
That's the word.
All this, I don't know, I'm on porn too often. I'm like, yes, my fans. Anyway, my subs. Update your pledge so that you can join our Discord community where we've been having a lot of really rad conversations. I also just shared some pictures that Ash took of me in the ruins of an abandoned church, all like covered in rope and drenched in water and mud and things.
That's life, friend, right?
Yeah, it was. It was so good. It was so fun.
Amazing.
So yeah, chat with me about all those things in the Discord by going to patreon.com/thedildorks to pledge at the $6 level or higher and join us there.
Yeah, and shout out to our top tier supporters, Amelia, Matthew, Nat B, and Tabitha Christie. Thank you also to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. Thank you to our wonderful guest, Mixnilan. Yay. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Okay. So it'll be 1, 2, 3, clap. 1, 2, 3. Cool. Thank you.
Go team.
Yeah.
Yay. Teamwork makes the dream work.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I'm sorry for all the faces you keep seeing me make throughout this thing. There's a thunderstorm happening right outside my window that has been
growing. Yeah, you were making a lot of faces. I was like, what? I assumed it was your cat.
I don't know if you'll,
lightning.
You'll be able to hear it later because the like little things on my microphone have been very loud. But there was like a solid 30-second rumble of thunder that I was just utterly delighted. It is just pouring, like the sky opened up in the middle of the podcast, and it's just windy, like a whole ass storm is happening out here, thunder and lightning.
We made the sky wet, y'all.
We did. And I'm just feeling like, this is, I'm really into this. This is really fascinating. Oh my god, the rain. Oh my god, I love the rain. Oh my god, the rain. Okay, anyway.
That's amazing.